is Stephen Whitaker and Eddie Chang coming to you live from Schreiber Radio, WDOT, once again. And we have with us right now another guest, Mr. Herman High Horowitz. He is a liberator of a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, and he's going to be talking to us today, and we have some questions for him. So, our first question for you, Mr. Horowitz, is what was your life like in America before the Second World War?
In America, my life was great. I was a young boy on a farm in upstate New York. Simple life. Didn't do much except go to school, which is different from going to school here in the city. School was 4 miles away, and we had to walk to school every morning. We didn't have yellow buses. And the only good day of the week was Thursday when my father went in for marketing and we had a ride in the horse and wagon. But I survived walking in all kinds of weather. And then went to high school, did almost the same thing. And growing up, there were very few. It was a small town, not too many people, but everybody was close. Everybody knew each other. And then came Pearl Harbor. And within months, we were in Uncle Sam's employment.
So once you were in the American Army, what were some of the things that you learned about the Nazis?
We didn't learn anything about the Nazis. And I'll tell you why.
Well, what were some of the biases you had? I'm sorry.
Well, this is why. When I was in the Army, we were doing our training. We were supposed to go to Africa. We trained in the Sahara Desert, the Mojave Desert. And just before we went to Africa, war ended there, and we wound up in Germany. We had no idea where we were going or who we were going to be fighting. We didn't know anything until we actually landed on Normandy.
And what was your experience like on Normandy?
Horrible. We were lucky because we got there 9 days after D-Day. And they had already established a beachhead, but they couldn't use tanks the first couple of days, so we had to wait until there was a little room to move around. And we didn't learn much on Normandy. It was when we got up onto the grounds going into France in the hedgerows that we really knew where we were.
Were you armor division?
Was that? Yes, I was a tank gunner driver on a Sherman tank in the Patton's 7th Armored Division.
And what kind of fighting did you see in Europe prior to your liberation of concentration camp?
Oh, awful lot. We had major battles in some of the biggest cities in France. We liberated almost the entire champagne-producing area in France. Liberated a town called Chartres, Chartres, one of the finest cathedrals in France. And my company commander was the son of Will Rogers, Will Rogers Jr. And we were ambushed 2 days later, lost 17 of my guys in one half a minute. It was not fun. It was rough going.
Have you ever come face to face with a German soldier before?
And before?
Yeah, I mean during
the battles. Yeah. Oh, sure.
And did the descriptions that you've heard about the Germans and what, and you know, as their propaganda said, like they were the evil Huns, did that kind of fit in with the...
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We knew one thing. That before they got us, we had to get them. And that's exactly what we did. Didn't keep score, but that's what we did.
Now, prior to finding a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, did you know of any of these activities were going on?
Absolutely nothing. We knew nothing about what the Germans were doing. We knew nothing about what they were doing to the Jews. To us, they were just Germans, and we had to liberate the countries that they had overrun.
So once you've liberated the first camp, can you just describe to us what you saw?
Yeah. First camp was a horror. It was Camp Ohrdruf, Hitler's pet project, building an underground communication center for the entire German army. And we found the camp, and within minutes, the guards were taking care of them. We found a horrible sight, bodies strewn all over. In a camp of 40,000, 17,000 died in the month before we got there. and they had no rations for 5 days. You could just not describe what we saw. It was just a horrendous sight for young boys who had never dreamed of this.
How old were you when you liberated the camp?
21.
What did you do when you liberated the camp? Did you try to feed some of the internees?
No, that was a tough thing to do. Because when a person has had no food for a long period of time, they don't take food easily. Food comes right back up. The nurses and they had to try to feed them gradually. We tried to help those who were still alive. We buried the dead, and there was nothing else we could do.
And did your division in particular help to get these people to relocation camps or to help them at all? Or
no, that's something we didn't do. That's what the military police did, and they had, I forget the name of it, they had a division that sought them refuge in DP camps.
And after this liberation, did you liberate any other camps?
Yes, we liberated one more camp. Probably the most horrible, most horrendous camp of all. That was Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, where Anne Frank, her sister Margot, and 17,000 people perished in less than 1 month.
At this camp, was it considerably different from Ohrdruf, or was it similar kind
of? Yeah, no, it was different. Ohrdruf was a labor camp. This was a concentration camp where no one was supposed to leave alive. And this is what they were doing. They had no food for days. And what we found, what the most horrible thing we found were those who were still barely alive. Walking aimlessly, staring into space. These are people who had just been saved from the throes of death, but so weak they couldn't even hug us or thank us for the liberation. They were degraded to the level of beasts. It was horrible, horrible sight to see. We were attached to the British Army at that time, and young American British boys and American boys who had been turned into adults in less than a year were crying unashamedly. Either out of pity or out of hate or out of both. I watched a young British soldier to my right kneel on the ground. He made the sign of the cross. And he looked upward and he says, "Dear Lord, tell me that what I am seeing is nothing but a bad dream." But we knew it was not. And this is the thing we saw. This is a prime example of man's inhumanity to man.
Now, I understand that your unit, the 7th Armored, was nicknamed the Lucky 7th. Where did that nickname originate from?
Well, I'll tell you, that was not it was by chance. When they were naming the divisions, they named the 2nd Hell on Wheels, and they named everyone different, and just threw out some names when somebody picked the name Lucky 7th. But in Europe, we took on a different name. In some countries, we were called the Ghost Division. Some we were called the Rattlesnake Division. Because they never knew where we were going to strike. We were a division. Our combat command was on loan to everybody. One time we were fighting with the 3rd Army, next with the 7th Army, then with the British. Wherever they needed somebody, that's where we went.
So in combat, did you ever face near-death experiences that you...
I guess you could call it that. We never thought
about
it.
Well, you've talked about the shrapnel that you knew back. Yeah.
That's another story. That's in Belgium during the Battle of the Bulge, and that's not part of the Holocaust story.
Okay. So as a closing remark, what would you like to tell as a message to the youths of America?
The message is this. It is up to the young people today to rid the world of bigotry, hatred, indifference, intolerance, and to champion the cause for religious freedom. Because if we don't get rid of those things, we are destined to return to the horrors of the past. And I don't think that is a pleasant thought.
All right, thank you very much,
Mr.
Horowitz.
You are very welcome.
Thank you so much. This is Eddie Chang and Stephen Whitaker. Be right back.